This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Mrs. Schlafly is a leading spokesperson in many of our country's ongoing national debates and has become a clear voice for those who are seeking a return to traditional conservative values. And now, here's Phyllis Schlafly.
Back in 1968, Paul Ehrlich predicted that the world would soon run out of food, oil, and water because people were having too many babies. He turned out to be spectacularly wrong on all counts, but political liberals still make doomsday predictions about overpopulation. Author Jonathan Last has a very different message. He says if America wants to continue to lead the world, we need more babies. His new book is called What to Expect When No One's Expecting America's Coming Demographic Disaster. Author Jonathan Last says the country needs a fertility rate of 2.1 in order to maintain its current population. The U.S. fertility rate is lower. It now stands at only 1.9. Why has the American birth rate fallen so low? It's the result of many cultural forces, including the pill, college, more women in the workforce, delayed marriage, delayed childbirth, and higher divorce rates. Even Social Security and Medicare are factors. First, couples no longer rely on children to care for them in their old age, so they aren't as motivated to go to the trouble of raising them. Second, even those who want more children find it increasingly difficult to afford them. If current trends continue, by 2050, all of America will look like Florida, a state known as God's waiting room because of its disproportionate elderly population. The implications of all this are disconcerting. An aging population combined with low birth rates equals a contracting labor force, and a dwindling tax base coupled with massive increases in government payouts. By 2034, there will be only two workers to support each retiree's Social Security. This new book by Jonathan Last is called What to Expect When No One's Expecting America's Coming Demographic Disaster.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Eagle Forum. Whether the topic is health care, education, election reform, taxes, or protection of the family, your local state legislators need to hear from you. At eagleforum.org, join the blog conversation with Phyllis Schlafly, and you'll better understand the hot issues in your state. That's at eagleforum.org. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract! A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offerer can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept! That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Ceramic body armor is rated to stop six hits. But what about the seventh? Unlike ceramic or Kevlar, Infidel body armor is proven to take hit after hit, and it just won't quit. Reasonably priced and designed for the smart civilian prepper, Infidel stops hundreds of hits from small arms to high-powered rifles. That means safety and peace of mind. Buy yours at InfidelBodyArmor.com. Spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L BodyArmor.com. Infidel body armor just won't quit. The government's Department of Homeland Security is buying up loads of ammo. At the same time, they're restricting civilians' rights to own and purchase firearms. Can you put two and two together? Infidel body armor can stop every round, including hollow points and 308 sniper rounds, is reasonably priced and fully legal. But for how long? Go to InfidelBodyArmor.com, spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L BodyArmor.com. Infidel body armor just won't quit.
Monday, August 26, 2013. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the sunny suburbs of Chicago. I really appreciate you joining me today on RBN for people who can handle the truth. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. RBN is now associated with Cumulus Media Network Satellite Services, which provides a 24/7 satellite channel to RBN on XDS. Cumulus Media has supplied XDS receivers to over 4,000 stations, each of which now has the capability to broadcast any RBN program. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit Spingola.com. There you will find the names of every single guest that I have ever had on the program since the end of 2010, as well as links to their websites. You will also see the list of upcoming guests. Another site that I wish to call your attention to is SpingolaSpeaks.info, which one of our listeners created. Wonderful, wonderful site. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@Spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, Spingola.com, or by going to Spingola.chatingo.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. Our guest today is Carl Radl, R-A-D-L. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. Welcome, Carl. Are you there?
No, I'm here. Don't worry. I pressed the mute button by mistake.
I do that all the time, and then I'm thinking it's the producer, and it's never the producer, it's always me. Okay, well, welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for having me back.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. You always bring us such wonderful knowledge, and of course, I love history, and you bring up things from history that are just absolutely essential to know so that we can figure out what's going on today.
Yep, I hope we got another one ready for you today with the murder of Nicholas II of Russia.
Indeed, yes. And it was a certain group of people who did this and planned it and provoked other groups of people. It's amazing how much influence and how much persuasive power that they have.
Yes, particularly because in this case, there is no room for any argument. There is no other people responsible because there is no other people in the command chain at all other than Jews.
Sure. So,
which is all the more frightening when you come to realize that there's four layers we know about and all of them were Jews.
Okay.
As well as the chap who pulled the trigger.
Yes. And of course, it's always the person that pulls the trigger that gets in trouble. Or get shot right away to silence him, and everybody goes on and does their own, continues the agenda.
Yep, that was more or less what happened, apart from they didn't shoot him because of the time. and he died in 1938 before, so a couple of different authors on the subject think, before Stalin had a chance to shoot him. So he died just before the Great Purges, or just around the time they erupted. So he was kind of lucky to get off scot-free, in some respects.
Right.
Just to give some background, the importance of the assassination of Tsar Nicholas II is really that it caused a massive escalation in the violence in the Russian Civil War. Because by the time of his death on July the 17th, 1918, the whites, or shall we say the counter-revolutionary forces, whatever you want to call them, were winning the war, not the Bolsheviks. The Bolsheviks were in headlong retreat. Had this not happened, had the Tsar escaped, had King George of England allowed him sanctuary, had Kaiser Wilhelm allowed him sanctuary when they had the opportunity to do so in 1917, then the Russian Civil War may have gone very, very differently. However, because you would have had at least a unifying factor, because the Bolsheviks only survived because they were unified, whereas their enemies, including their enemies on the left, were not.
It's always kind of amazed me why King George did not offer him and his family sanction, because, I mean, they were cousins, for peace sake.
They were cousins, and King George, a great lover, was almost the husband of the Tsar's wife.
Right.
Very almost, because Queen Victoria of England, because she was Alexandra's grandmother, wanted him to marry her as part of the ongoing legacy. But instead, she went for the Tsar. He didn't do it. He didn't offer him sanctuary, large part because he believed that if he did so, he would lose his monarchy. He would lose his position. And he put his own regard over that of his cousin. And then, in the 1930s, particularly with the most notably with the memoirs of David Lloyd George, the British Prime Minister at the time, he had Lloyd George expunge an entire chapter which laid bare the fact that it had been the King who had objected. It had been no one else but the King who had objected to bringing the Tsar over, because he felt that there were going to be radical, you know, there was going to be a Bolshevik revolution in England if he did so. And in some respects, you can understand that, considering that there were major riots in Glasgow at the time and so forth going on. But he didn't have the courage of his convictions, and then tried to cover it up.
Well, just about so many monarchies were just gone after the First World War.
Yeah.
And so I can see his reasoning.
You can see his reasoning, but it doesn't excuse what he did, and then the fact he tried to cover up what he had done.
Sure.
In my opinion, anyway. In terms of the actual history of the issue, it's one of these cases where Jews have often denied they're involved. And they often add the caveat that if they were, it was incidental involvement. It was just, they just happened to be there, kind of thing.
Sure.
All the perpetrators happened to be Jewish. A good example is the denying the killing of the Tsar by a Jew called Yakov Yalovsky, who is the man who headed up and then pulled the trigger of the death squad, as well as running the Tsar's, incarceration for the last 14 days of his life. He had a death squad of six Letts, which is not as usually thought of Latvians or Lithuanians. It just refers to any non-Russian. So there was a Latvian and a Lithuanian and I think a German and so forth. It was a Finn and what have you. And then you had five Russians on top of that. In matter of fact, that is in some respects a myth, because the death squad actually, the people who pulled the trigger, there was only three of them, of which there was one Russian, one Latvian, and one Jew. And the Jew was Yudovsky. Blaming Yalovsky in toto and completely ignores the command chain and what was going on. And the indisputed fact that Yalovsky was the one who killed the Tsar, as all reports, including his secret memo of 1920 and his official historical interview by the USSR on the matter in 1934, indicate. So he gave these two interviews about what he had done, and they match up with all the other accounts that we know of. It's often suggested, again, as a way of apologising for it, that it was a desperate move by Lenin to stop the Tsar falling into the hands of the 25,000-strong Czech Legion, which was under General Diederichs, then advancing rapidly on Ekaterinburg, where the Tsar was held. it was only in the late 1990s that it was proven beyond doubt what many historians have long suspected in the West, that the order actually came from Lenin, and more particularly from Sverdlov, not from the Urals Regional Soviet, which was the USSR's historical version, whereby the local Bolsheviks took command and they did it. It was all their fault. It was nothing to do with Lenin. And even to the 1990s, they claimed that the family wasn't killed. Rather, it was only the Tsar.
Right, but it was the entire family. I mean,
it was the entire family.
A lot of evidence. All righty, we are going to a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plans, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info. Or go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's 800-477-9256. Or go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com.
Freedom ain't free, but shooting is cheap. Knob Creek Gun Range. Shoot safe, pay less, have fun. Rifles, pistols, shotguns, cannons, what you got? We got a 350-yard outdoor range, plus other secret ranges we're not even supposed to talk about. Come to Knob Creek Gun Range in West Point, Kentucky, and celebrate diversity at our next shoot coming up on October 11th, 12th, and the 13th. 690 Ritchie Lane, West Point, Kentucky, 40177. Visit our website at knobcreekrange.com to find out more information on everyday activities or to get information on the October shoot on October 11th, 12th, and the 13th. Or call 502-922-4457. Again, that's 502-922-4457. Knob Creek Gun Range, where the Second Amendment comes first. Go to knobcreekrange.com today or just show up ready to fire at 690 Ritchie Lane, West Point, Kentucky, 40177. Call 502-922-4457.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Adelbeard of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is Semitic Controversies, all one word, SemiticController.blogspot.com. Okay, you were talking about Lenin, that the order came from Lenin, actually?
Yes, it came from Lenin. That's the general agreement. That there was no doubt in just about any historian's mind on the subject that it came from Lenin. It had to have come from Lenin, because something this major was almost a reversal of his policy. and theory. However, we tend to believe that Lenin had planned to do this for quite some time, and I'll get into why that is in due course. But after the abdication of the Tsar on March the 5th, 1917, the Tsar was moved by Alexander Kerensky, who of course was Jewish, he was then the effective head of the provisional government, from his favourite palace at Zalye Skelo to the Siberian city of Tobolsk, with a renutine of 34 attendants, servants, doctors, and so on. He then inhabited the old governor's house and were taken care of to an extent. So they didn't live in luxury, but they were comfortable and they were guarded night and day, of course. In April 1918, however, things had rapidly changed due to the accession of the Bolsheviks to power and the October Revolution. And a political commissar called Vasily Yakolev, who wasn't Jewish, he was actually Russian, who was one of Lenin's troubleshooter commissars, was ordered to take the family from Tobolsk to Moscow. The official rationale was that they'd be safer there because of the advance of the white forces, but people suspect that the actual logic was in order to fulfill Trotsky and Moises Yuritsky, again both Jewish, plan to bring about a trial of the Tsar in Petrograd, St. Petersburg, in the same sort of way as like a mass trial ally of the French Revolution and the chopping off of the king's head kind of thing.
Sure.
What then happened is subject to some dispute, because a local Bolshevik called Golishkin, which wasn't his real name, his name he used was Philip Golishkin. I'm not going to try and spell that because it's horrendous. His actual name was Issei Isakovich, and he was Jewish, as has been testified by Helen Rapport in her book Ekaterinenburg, when she did some research into him and found out he was Jewish as well, although this was known from at least 1920 because it appears as in what we call the Sokolow account, which is the book The Last Day of the Romanovs by Robert Wilton of the London Times, because Sokolow was his major contributor to that work. He was the major source. So Golishkin was one of Sverdlov's almost hitmen would be the way of putting it. He was a long-time senior Bolshevik and a professional revolutionary who had served on the Central Committee of the Social Democratic Party, which is the party the Bolsheviks came from, as well as the Mensheviks, in 1907 and 1912 with Lenin. He was also a close associate and friend of Sverdlov's, as I mentioned, and he was nicknamed the Eye of the Kremlin in Ekaterinenburg for the scale of his influence.
Now, did Lenin have a particular reason to go against the Romanovs? Because they had killed his brother, because his brother was involved in an attempt to kill Alexander III, right?
Yeah, he had enough reason. But I mean, to quote Robert Service on the matter of why Lenin did what he did, he said very adroitly that he, Lenin, exterminated the Romanovs because they had misruled Russia. But he also turned to such measures because he really enjoyed letting himself loose against people in general from the Ancien regime. So basically he's saying that Lenin was in many ways sadistic. He wanted to kill them because of who they were and because of what they represented in his mind. It's kind of like how Nazis and Jews are seen, so the Nazis killing Jews are seen in the popular literature. In the same sort of way that it was the kind of idea of, these are my enemy, I've completely dehumanized my enemy because they're scum, so forth, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes off, and then by that dehumanizing process, you enable yourself to kill them. And the more you kill, the more catharsis is achieved, as they say. The weird thing about this entire episode and the rerouting of Golishkin, of the Tsar's train, by Golishkin, really disaster train from Tobolsk and Moscow to Tobolsk to Ekaterinenburg by Golishkin is the role of Yakolev. Partially because Yakolev, the authors and the subject are kind of split, because some say that Yakolev was just an ordinary commissar. However, what he did next after this happened was quite surprising. He immediately went and defected to the whites and served with the monarchists on the Civil War side. And there's some debate as to whether, in fact, he was a monarchist. It's also possible he was. He felt his time was up in terms of the Bolshevik hierarchy because he'd been overridden by Goloshkin. But it's interesting because he had tried to move the... He had been friendly with the Romanovs and also tried to move them into territory that was going to be taken by the whites in and the Czech Legion in short order. There was that debate as to whether or not he was actually going to save them, or he was just trying to be practical. Goloshkin was a weird one because he was effectively ruling the Ural Regional Soviet, which is the local body, at Sverdlov's behest, and used the militancy of the Soviet, which was by all accounts one of the most militant in the entire of Russia at the time, and was also was known to openly want to kill the Tsar, to take the issue away from Trotsky and Yulitsky, who wanted to have a trial and so forth, and place it back with Sverdlov and Lenin. Basically, it was a way of controlling Trotsky's ambitions, because even at this time as Commissar for War, he was a radical. And it was most people tend to see that Lenin was already concerned about Trotsky and his, what should we say, radicalism, and the fact that he got carried away an awful lot.
At the dogma in two different ways, and there's bound to be a parting of those... of those ways.
Yes, because Lenin was very much more in Stalin's tradition of being much more practical, whereas Trotsky was an individual who actually believed that if the Red Army rolled into Germany, for example, in 1920-1921, then all the working class would rise up and there'd be a massive revolution and so forth.
Right.
So he was very much the optimist, was Trotsky, which is one of the reasons he has been so loved by the far left, because he was the one who never got the chance. But by all accounts, most historians believe that Trotsky would have actually been far worse than Stalin ever was, because of Trotsky's activities in the Civil War and his own fanaticism.
Right. Look in this country. I mean, a lot of those Trotskyites came over here and are pretty active in doing what they do in a very, very subtle way.
Oh, yes. A lot of the modern liberalism comes from Trotskyite circles in the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, who were kind of renegade Marxist, but didn't tie themselves to the crimes of Stalin.
Right.
And it was very attractive during the 1970s, of course, when you had large sects of Trotskyites protesting everywhere. No surprise there, of course, but there you go.
Right.
Because they like to protest at Trotskyites. That's their job in life.
Right.
Lenin also wanted the Tsar alive in some respects, because he could use him to extract as much money out of Germany and the Allies for keeping them alive as possible. So he had a massive war debt to pay to Germany as part of the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk, and part of that was to keep the Tsar alive.
Right. Alrighty, we are going to a break. We'll be back in about 4 minutes.
John Stettmiller here. Gives me great pleasure to welcome our new sponsor, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. They are a veteran-owned, Christian-based preparedness company. I know the owner, and I can tell you they share the same ideals and values that we do. From quality long-term food to self-defense and camping supplies, they have what you need to prepare. Great wholesale pricing, quality products, the best customer service. You just can't go wrong. One example, they have a one-year food package that includes GMO-free vegetables and fruit, plus real meat like roast beef and chicken breast. Over 2,000 calories a day for $19.95. Not your run-of-the-mill carb bucket like a lot of them out there. From stun guns, batons, tents, gas masks, chemical suits, the list goes on and on. One thing you'll learn over time is value is defined by quality plus price. You get that value with AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Tell them that John sent you and receive a free knife with your order today.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
That moment of panic, sheer terror, really. You're afraid to answer the phone, frightened by who might be at the door. If you're facing foreclosure or being harassed by debt collectors, you know the feeling. You need to visit whatliesinyourdebt.com to turn the tables on the banksters, collection agencies, and other crooks. Whatliesinyourdebt.com has solutions. Whatliesinyourdebt.com features live training webinars from experts, a member forum, support from experts who've been where you are right now and came out the other side in a better financial situation. If you are like millions of Americans who are behind on their mortgage, behind on their credit cards, or just being harassed by debt collectors, then this system is for you. We promise. If you cannot stop your foreclosure, even if it's imminent, if you cannot stop those debt collectors from bugging you, if you cannot clean up your credit, and finally, if you cannot make a few $1,000 during the entire process, make money from the debt collectors, yes, at whatliesinyourdebt.com, we will refund your money 100% in the first 60 days. Don't fear the bill collectors anymore. Visit whatliesinyourdebt.com.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. Theravim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from Theravim? Simple. Theravim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to Theravim.com. That's TERRAVIM.com. Theravim, the best supplements on earth.
Golden Stag Safaris invites you to hunt in one of Argentina's most beautiful scenarios. Enjoy the quietness of the Pampas and the five-star accommodation lodge. Excellent food and wine included in your stay, all the while hunting big game in the Argentine Valley, an area known for having a wide range of game, excellent trophies, the biggest stags in South America, as well as many other species, all gold medal quality. One-on-one guided hunts, rental guns available with the highest quality scopes in every caliber, Land Rovers for transport, pickup at Buenos Aires Airport, and a private aircraft for charter is all available. Go to www.goldenstagsafaris.com to see photos and for more information. Again, www.goldenstagsafaris.com.
Today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And inasmuch as Tsar Nicholas II did so much for the Jews, do you find it interesting to know that they were behind his assassination, and what can we conclude from that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just he did a lot of things about them. He did a lot of things for them. I mean, it's because he was the one who, in many respects, gave them the out, if you will. He was the one who allowed them to leave Russia, whereas his predecessors often took the attitude, well, they can stay in Russia. They can stay in Russia and they can be what they'll be. And the attempts were to convert them to Christianity and so forth and that kind of thing. But the fact they killed him is no real surprise, considering the fact that the Russian revolutionary movement had, from at least the 1860s, been heavily dominated by Jews, to the point where you cannot study the Russian revolutionary movement or even the wider revolutionary movement in Europe without taking into account the sheer number of Russian Jews that were involved at various different levels, as well as in the various different tendencies. So you have large numbers in anarchism, you've got large numbers in Marxism, you've got them in social democracy, and so forth. And it's always amazed me the fact that you get that there are large numbers of people out there who try and argue, for whatever reason I don't know, that this is not, that this is just a coincidence. that the Jews, that we shouldn't look at that, that they were just part of an oppressed minority. Well, that really wouldn't work, in large part because they were massively influential in Europe, and even in Russia, there were sections of the Jewish population which were quite influential, and they had some very, very strong supporters, as one can see from studying the Belize case in 1913, when large numbers of the intelligentsia were basically fighting for the Jews against the authorities. And it's one of these things that tends to get forgotten is the fact that the Russian intelligentsia was often very pro-Jewish, but had cycles. So it would go through a cycle of about every 10 to 20 years of being anti-Jewish, and then for another 10-20 years would be pro-Jewish. And it depended entirely upon what the fashion was at the moment. But at that particular time, the fashion was to be pro-Jewish.
Right.
I just find it interesting.
And the most of what we hear from the mainstream media, the court historians, is that, oh, there were terrible, terrible pogroms in Russia, and it was just awful. The government was perpetrating these pogroms, when in fact it was just I think it was the Jews themselves that initiated them.
The Jews, to a large extent, caused them in that they would do things that were not necessarily provocative, if you will, in much the same way as only last week they attacked a crucifix in the Ukraine and then condemned it for a bit, and then demanded that people remove it, because they deemed it to be offensive for some bizarre reason.
They're very consistent, aren't they?
Oh yeah, and they also firebombed the monastery. Nice.
Wow.
Such nice people.
Yes, indeed.
It's just the house that they settled the Tsar's family in was called the Ipatiev House, and it stood to the 1970s, having been constructed in the 1890s for a local merchant. But in the 1970s, it was destroyed by a chap we all know called Boris Yeltsin, who was then the chief of the Ural Soviet. And where it used to stand at the Church of the Blood now stands, which celebrates the Romanovs as Orthodox Christian martyrs. The original commandant of Ipatiev House, which is where they were kept with their much reduced retinue in Ekaterinburg, was a man named Alexander Avdiev. He's a long-term Bolshevik and not a Jewish one. He was originally ill-disposed to the family and recruited 100 or so local factory workers to guard the Tsar. These were, of course, brutal, doing things like sticking their hands in the Tsarina's food while she was eating it, refusing to allow the Romanovs to bathe and go to the toilet in private, scrawling obscene and pornographic messages on the walls. And remember, there were 5 young girls in the house, nearly all of whom were teenagers. And we know that at least one of the princesses, the Grand Duchess Melia Romanov, who was 16, had sexual relations with one of the guards due to this barrage of, well, pornography that she just plain wasn't used to.
Yeah, so are you saying that they raped her?
More or less, yeah.
Yes, okay.
Avdiev, however, softened his attitude over time, and the guards became fairly friendly with the Romanovs as a rule. When Goloshkin, of course, the Jew, found out and how lax the guard was, since most of the guards were drunk most of the time, he got Avdiev dismissed from his position and sent to the Red Army on the front line as political commissar with most of his men. Goloshkin was replaced by a man called Yakov Yelitsky, who was a Jew, of course, on the 4th of July 1918, which was only a few days before the Tsar was killed. Yulovsky was another long-time Bolshevik, and he was Jewish, and we know he was Jewish because his grandfather was a quite respected Polish rabbi, and before the war, he had expressed his own intent that he wanted to kill the Tsar. Yulovsky's insertion wasn't an accident, and he and his second command, Nikulin, were proven Cheka executioners in the local area. Indeed, he dismissed most of Adia's house guards and sent them to the front lines, I've already said, and he brought his own special officers in, and as well as largely paid for mercenaries. The reason for that was simply because ordinary Russians may have had scruples about killing the Tsar when whatever they may have thought of him originally, and while mercenaries and proven Cheka fanatics wouldn't have any.
Right.
On the 4th of July, and this is just after, this is just as you're replacing him, the German ambassador, who had been instrumental in negotiating to get the Tsar released, von Mirbach, was assassinated by two socialist revolutionaries who are basically, the word to be would call them, they were more conventional socialists, pretending to be local Cheka officers that asked, so they killed him. They basically walked into his office and shot him. The socialist revolutionaries then revolted, and a mob came up to the Kremlin but didn't storm it. Had they stormed it, then they would have toppled Lenin's government, as he had no troops there at the time and had no ability to protect himself and nowhere to flee. And there was also a large rising of socialist revolutionaries in Ekaterinburg at the Velika Ishtesh factory nearby, which had to be put down by Yalovsky and his men. There was also SR risings, or what we call SR, Socialist Revolutionaries, in what remained of Bolshevik territory against them, and although these were crushed, these are a good indication of just how unsatisfied people were with Lenin's rule. And a memorable little quote from the British consul in Ekaterinburg, Thomas Preston, who, when he went to the railway station there, he saw starving people everywhere, but well-fed Bolshevik commissars enjoying first-class service, fine wines and delicacies in the former aristocrat sort of first-class compartment, in what was called what he called himself the commissararchy, rather than the aristocracy. On the 20th, and it just gives you again some more perspective. On the 20th of June, as part of this ongoing attempt to kill the Tsar by other means, if you will. On the 20th of June, the Tsar's family received the first of four of what we call the first of four officer letters, which had supposedly come from monarchists. The first one may have done, we don't know, but it seems unlikely. And it was generally believed they actually came from the Cheka instead. And certainly after the second, they definitely came from the Cheka, because they were so amateurish as to be stupid. Which we have to remember that Yurovsky was heading at the time under Gloshikin's direction. The last of these letters on the 26th, 27th of June claimed that the Romanovs merely had to make an escape attempt with one motive having conveniently been opened after their continual request of their doctor, Dr. Botkin, on the night of the 27th, by climbing through this window. Unknown to them, there were two machine guns which were trained on this window, one from a building across the street and the other in the nearby church tower, that the Romanovs effectively smelled a rat, fortunately for them, and stayed away from the windows while sitting up for two nights fully dressed, ready to go in case it was real, after all, and saved their lives for a few days in doing so. The purpose of all this was to allow the local Bolsheviks to see if they could get them to do their work for them and escape, so that they could be killed trying to escape, and thus exonerate the Bolsheviks centrally and locally from any blame. And this was the later semi-official line of the USSR, and they blamed Goloshkin and Yurovsky, not Lenin and Sverdlov. And had this actually come off and Cheka killed them when they were escaping, the line would have been, oh, they escaped, therefore they were shot, and no one's to blame but themselves.
Isn't that always the way that they do? Just blame the victims. The victims are guilty of the thing that got them killed.
Yeah, amazing. More or less. It's one of these little things.
Sure.
They did.
Alrighty, we're going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Do you love America? Do you support the right to bear arms? Do you have an opinion on the current immigration issue? Do you believe in the dollar? You have a voice. You have an opinion. Let it be heard. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com right now and make your voice count. Do you like your rights taken away for the so-called sake of public safety? Do you want to repeal Obamacare? Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today and fight back. All you have to do is fill out a short survey, and you're done. Simple, easy, fast. For your time, you get entered to win free gold and silver. That's right. Get gold and silver free by filling out this short survey that enters you to win. AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today. That's AmericanFreedomSurvey.com.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack, for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. CampingSurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at CampingSurvival.com on all your prepared food needs.
Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today. Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
The AK-47 is known for being tough and battle-ready. Now you can be battle-ready with tough tactical gear from StrikeHardGear.com. Made in the USA, StrikeHardGear.com specializes in mil-spec quality tactical gear for your AK-47, SKS Mosin-Nagant, and other Russian-style weapons. Visit StrikeHardGear.com to find chest rigs, buttstock pouches, bandoliers, shoulder bags, and other one-of-a-kind pieces of specialty gear you won't find anywhere else. Tough as nails and affordable. Buy with confidence from StrikeHardGear.com with our no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee. After that, run it hard because you're backed by a lifetime replacement warranty. Use the discount code RBN and get 5% off your order. Pull the trigger on StrikeHardGear.com today. Strike Hard Gear.
Carl Radl, R-A-D-L, the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And it is amazing when you think of all the political assassinations and the focus that the court historians do not put upon them. I was doing a little study the other day about all the assassinations just around this period of time. And we're talking diplomats and mayors of Moscow and just all kinds of things in this, maybe a 20, 30-year span.
Yes, there's an awful lot of killings occurred at this particular point in history. Certainly, it was the killing of the Romanovs was possibly, it was the, if you want a better term, it was the key one in Russia because it was... It was the former head of state, and it did occur at a time when there was an explicit reason for them wanting to do it, and partially because on the 10th of July, the new Soviet constitution, which had largely been written by Sverdlov, was unveiled in Petrograd, St. Petersburg. Meanwhile, a massive Cheka crackdown on socialist opponents was in full swing, with mass executions being the norm across Russia, and that crackdown was especially felt in Ekaterinburg, which had become satisfied with the Bolshevik rule.
Which is amazing. There were so few actual Bolsheviks when you compare it to the Russian population in general.
Basically, at this point,
they had
no propaganda appeal left, because they had, well, the country was starving, right. It was at war, and they were losing the war. Well, and it didn't seem like they'd last long, to the point where the British, the French, the Germans, and so forth all believed that the Bolsheviks would fail, and would fail in a few weeks, and it would all end.
Right. Didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen. And part of the reason it didn't happen is because by killing the Tsar, they split the whites.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. And while that was all going on, I mean, it was in many respects an actual thought out policy that had been agreed on well beforehand, as we can see from the fact that the Cheka, in Perm, shot the Tsar's brother, Grand Duke Mikhail, on the night of the 12th, 13th of June. And what this is generally believed to be is generally believed to be the dry run.
Right.
In that they had made the decision in June that they wanted to kill them, and they had to kill them, but they needed to make sure on what would happen. Because if you kill a king, and you're in the middle of you've just lost a war to Germany, and there are German troops on your border, then you've got, and your own armed forces, they're non-existent, basically, and they're conscripts, most of them, and you're fighting a highly organized enemy. If you do the wrong thing and if the Germans react the wrong way by invading again, you've lost.
Right.
They needed to do that just to see what would happen. And because the Germans did nothing, they sort of went ahead. It was preparation. It was also indicated by the fact that in late June, the Swedish communist newspaper Politska reported that the Tsar was going to be killed, or the Bolsheviks had already killed him. And this particular paper was known for its closeness to Lenin. And that this had happened suggests quite a lot, as well as the fact on the 29th of June, the Urals Regional Soviet, which again was controlled by Goloshkin, who was in turn responsible to Lenin and Sverdlov, had unanimously voted to execute the Tsar. And it was only left to be ratified by Lenin and Sverdlov in St. Petersburg. On the 6th of July, Yulovsky's detachment suddenly got brand new American-made pistols and heavy machine guns, Colts and Maxim specifically, which were a real rarity at the time, and make no sense unless they were for a special purpose, because there was barely enough guns for the Bolshevik troops at the front. So why all of a sudden would they give these few troops, superb weapons at the time? To go and, well, to stand guard all day and not be used when their own troops, they were losing the war, needed them.
Indeed.
The logic is quite obvious.
Yeah.
And on the 9th, things got even worse. The Red Army garrison at Ekaterinburg defected en bloc to the Czech Legion. And so the Red Army now desperately needed the 300 men guarding the Tsar to be moved to the front. The same day, Yulovsky suddenly requested 400 pounds of sulfuric acid from the local pro-Bolshevik doctor in Ekaterinburg, who judiciously provided it. This was obviously to destroy the bodies, and it was later used for that purpose. And as I've already said, that on the 10th, a new Soviet constitution was suddenly announced, and followed by a Cheka crackdown. And at this point, the country's infrastructure was collapsing. The Bolsheviks weren't able to feed and support the people. And they basically were in a terrible situation, and all they were doing was churning out death squads. That's all they could do. And on the 12th, Goloshkin returned from Moscow finally, having gone there on the 3rd, with the substance of the Urals Regional Soviet vote on the matter to execute the Tsar and his family, with a thumbs up from Lenin and Sverdlov to do the deed. Nothing was put in writing. And that alone tells us, what happened, because we know it physically happened, because we've got the bodies, we've had so forth. It's unlike the Holocaust, which got bodies and so forth. We've got all the necessaries. And there was a verbal order. And the one thing that's commented on by just about every historian on the subject is the lack of any mention of it in Lenin's and Sverdlov's papers. That they mention nothing about it until it's happened. There's no mention of any orders or any discussions or anything. So who was Gloshkin going to Moscow to confer with? Well, obviously, the two men who could give him the permission to say yes or no, you want to do this, and because otherwise he'd have been shot.
Sure.
Not unsurprisingly.
Now, isn't that kind of interesting that 10 days later that Lenin outlawed all anti-Semitism, and people who broke that law would be executed? I mean, that's just 10 days after they killed the Tsar and his family.
Well, that was part of the Constitution.
Yes.
That was part of the new constitution. That was actually before.
Okay.
It was before, and that was part of the constitution that that these groups were, because what was happening was you were in the Bolshevik Party. You had elements who wanted to get rid of the Jews in the Bolshevik Party, or that even had Bolsheviks who didn't like them, and to the point where even Stalin had said in 1907 that there needs to be a purge. Because half the Social Democratic Party is Jewish, and that is not a Russian Workers' Party. It is interesting the fact that you say about the illegalization of what they call anti-Semitism. It was the legalization of any sort of sentiment of minorities, but that's what was really aimed at only one.
Right.
Because the other minorities were not, you know, there wasn't a problem with them really, apart from some Georgians, some Poles. But I mean, it was tiny compared with the fact that the main source of ire was against Jews.
And of course, they didn't want it out that the Jews were really behind the assassination of the Tsar and his family, and so they had to make it illegal so nobody could talk about it.
More or less, yes, because there was no, because it was so, shall we say, there's no room for maneuver because Gloshkin and Yulovsky were early identified as being Jewish, and the fact that it was known what they were, and the fact that these are the people involved, and you can't get around that fact, and that even at the top level, they can't say that it was a top level order from a Gentile. In fact, it was top level order from Jews,
right?
And that's in many respects is the kicker on it. The fact that there is no Gentile involved in the process apart from the two other gunmen,
right?
Ilimankov and Vaganov. One was Latvian, one was Russian.
And of course, using the law to silence people from pointing the fingers at the actual culprits. Is kind of a model for what has happened in this country.
Yes, and that's where the term political correctness comes from. Lenin,
yes.
Which is always surprises people when they learn that one. The fact that a term we use today comes from Lenin, and that the concept itself, as well as the substance, comes from him.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, we will be back. Actually, we'll be back at 6 minutes after the hour because we have our top of the hour break and the Phyllis Schlafly Report.